This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
In the last hours, murder mom Susan Smith cries, sobs, breaks down in front of a parole board begging to be released. She says she has, quote, improved during her years behind bars. I wonder if that could be said of her two little boys, Michael and Alex. She drove her car into a South Carolina lake and then blamed an unknown black male for hijacking her car. What a load of BS, technical legal term. Well, thankfully, this time at least, the parole board got it right and saw through her crocodile tears. That's right, Susan Smith, parole, denied. Hello, I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. What exactly happened? What led us to this day, this moment, these crocodile tears, and this parole board hearing? See if this jogs your memory. Listen.
Yes, ma'am. There's a lady who come up our door, and some guy jumped into a red light with her car with her two kids in it, and he took off, and she got out of the car here at Ohio.
And he's got the kids?
Yes, ma'am, and her car. She's real hysterical, and I just decided I need to call the law and get them down here.
What kind of car is it? What we need to know something.
We're trying to ask her now. A Mazda Protege. What color was it? A burgundy Mazda Protege.
Get them going, Pam. I got two kids.
Okay. I love that degree of detail. I don't even know where to go first because I've got such awesome experts, but I'm going to go first with Chris McDonough. He is the director of Cold Case Foundation. Okay, don't care. Former homicide detective, starting to care, getting hotter. He has his own YouTube channel, The Interview Room, where I found him. You can find him at coldcasefoundation.org or on The Interview Room. Former homicide detective, 300-ish homicide scenes under his belt, Chris McDonough. Don't you love the degree of detail? Hey, you know what, Sydney? Sometimes you got to hear the best stuff. Can you play that one more time? Listen.
Yes, ma'am. There's a lady who come up our door, and some guy jumped into a red light with her car with her two kids in it, and he took off, and she got out of the car here at Ohio.
And he's got the kids?
Yes, ma'am, and her car. She's real hysterical, and I just decided I need to call the law and get them down here.
What kind of car is it? We need to know something.
We're trying to ask her now. A Mazda Protege. What color was it? A burgundy Mazda Protege.
Get them going, Pam. I got two kids.
Okay. All the detail, Chris McDonough. She's, quote, real hysterical. And you need to call the law and get them down here right now. And you hear her feeding details in the background.
Nancy, wasn't that the narrative that captivated America?
How can you be so calm?
You know, we just get used to it, unfortunately, right? It's what somebody...
I still get very angry, very angry. And I know the end of this story. But the detail, have you ever seen perps? And they will spin you a yarn with such incredibly rich detail.
Yeah, and typically that detail, if it's that minutia and that amount, it's typically a sign of deception. And she kicked it off right from that 911 call.
From the beginning, running up to somebody's house, talking about some guy jumps out. And you know, this occurs in rural Union County, South Carolina, near the John D. Long Lake. And, you know, hold on, Chris McDonough, where do you live, Chris?
Well, right now I'm in Arizona, but I lived in South Carolina right there in Mount Pleasant.
You're very familiar with this area. Let me go to another country boy like this country girl right here. Jim Scott Morgan joining me, although he's gotten pretty highfalutin. Professor of Forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet, still waiting on another book to come out, host of Body Bags, a hit podcast. This area, Chris McDonough has lived in South Carolina. I've gone to this scene before. It's extremely rural, and I'm supposed to believe a guy jumps out of what from behind a stop sign and hijacks her car and takes off with the children clearly in the back seat, two little boys?
Yeah, what are the odds that you're going to have somebody that wants to do this kind of harm, whether or not they had an awareness that, you know, these poor little angels were buckled down in those back seats? The fact that you would have this kind of aggressive behavior in that location where she was specifically targeted as an investigator, I'm certainly going to raise an eyebrow, and I'm going to take a long look at what she has to say, because as you and I both know, Nancy, the lion's share of homicides that we talk about have some kind of familial connection. That means that you're around intimates, those individuals that are most important. So you're going to tell me that a random stranger just came up and kidnapped these babies and run off with them and left her standing on the side of the road weeping?
Now, did you hear what he just did, Chris McDonough?
Mm-hmm.
I am going along with everything he says, but he's a wily one. You got to really watch what Joe Scott says. I agree with the whole rural aspect. But did you hear him say, if the unknown male assailant noticed the children in the back seat? I'm looking right now at a 94 Mazda Protege. You can see straight into the back seat from every angle of the car. It's not like, you know, you see those black SUVs with tinted windows. You can't see what's going on in there. No, you can see exactly what's going on in the back seat. And I'm looking at a shot from the distance. I can see through the back window, through the back dash, and through the other side of the car. Whoever took the car could definitely see that children were strapped into car seats in the back seat.
100%.
I mean, okay, you know what? Let's take a listen to the 911 call. Listen.
Union 105.
105, go ahead.
Said it was a black male driving a burgundy Protege.
Affirmative, 105.
And he had two juveniles with him.
105, from what I understood, these were small children. These are her children, and she jumped out of the car, and he took the car with the children, and he's headed toward Chester.
Union 100.
100, go ahead.
Are the victim and the suspect in this call the same family?
100, from what I gathered by the call, they are not. This is a stranger that had jumped in the lady's car at a red light, and she jumped out.
I mean, really? Tara, I'm leading up to what Susan Smith is doing right now. And let me tell you, it involves six different men. That said, Tara Malik joining me out of Boise, Idaho, co-owner Smith and Malik, former state and federal prosecutor. Tara, once again, blame the black man. I remember when this happened, I was trying a case, and I looked over at my friend, my colleague, who went on to be a judge, I might add. And I went, Herman, have you seen the composite of the guy that Susan Smith described? And he went, yeah, I know what you're going to say. I'm like, yeah, it looks just like you. It looked just like Herman Sloan, my trial partner, who had come into court to bail me out of some sling I got in with the judge with some appellate law trying to suggest that I was right and whatever I did. But he went, yeah, I've heard. I look just like the Susan Smith perp. And he did. I mean, think about it, Tara. An innocent person could have been arrested and probably tried and convicted based on her fake composite and all of her lies. Like my Herman. One of my best friends in the DA's office.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the crime itself was atrocious and horrific and terrible. And then, you know, to give this false profile of someone else who may have done it, wasting resources, law enforcement resources, wasting everybody's time, but also, like you said, putting somebody else potentially in jeopardy of being picked up for it. And it's just mind-boggling that she would go down this road.
You know, I've dealt with the sod defense many times. I named it that. Some other dude did it. S-O-D-D. Here she goes. Some other dude did it. And listen to her. Listen.
I would like to say to whoever has my children that they please, I mean, please bring them home to us where they belong.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
After nearly 30 years behind bars, Susan Smith says she should be released. In attendance, much of it was by remote, her ex-husband David Smith, along with prosecutors, all wearing photos of the two little boys that were murdered that day. Her two sons, Michael and Alex, all of them opposing parole. Do you remember her motive? Because I do. She wanted to marry the rich guy in town's son, and he did not want a ready-made family, i.e., her two boys, Michael and Alex. So, all done. She killed them. Now, let's get married. You know, I will never forget when she gave that tearful plea, much like the tearful plea she gave in the last hours to the parole board, for someone, some unknown kidnapper, to bring her boys home. Oh, she was so convincing, just like she was in front of the parole board. Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us. She's a renowned psychoanalyst at drbethanymarshall.com. As a matter of fact, she now has a recurring role in Paris in Love Season 2. That said, Dr. Bethany, I don't get it. We've got men sexting and texting and writing and sending money and love letters to Susan Smith when she is a bald-faced liar that killed her children in the worst way, letting her car, her burgundy protege, go down a ramp with the two little boys alive, strapped in the back seat. Why? I don't get it. Why would men want to be with this woman, send her money and sex text with her? But did you hear her lying? Mm-hmm. Do you remember when that happened? Crying and the snotting and the all that happening. And I want to say, whoever has my children, they please, please bring them home to us where they belong, knowing full well they drowned strapped in their car seats.
Well, it shows how immature she is at the most basic level that she thinks.
Okay, wait. The most you can say she's immature? She murdered two little boys.
We know she's a sociopath. But what beyond the fact that she's a sociopath, what additional factors are there that would lead to this? And one is an overattachment to men. She loves that feeling of falling in love, the feeling you have the first 6 months.
How are you linking this to double murder? Why this woman did not get the death penalty, I do not know. And now there's 6 guys trying to have sex with her, really? Ew.
But it's really a pathological attachment to men.
It's like being in a barrel with a rattlesnake. Who wants that?
Well, apparently they do. And, you know, women who commit infanticide, who kill their children, often have some really... First of all, they're usually what we call cluster B.
You better not say really has some sexy mojo going on, because I'm totally cutting your mic.
Oh, okay. So they're cluster B, which means they have 3 different disorders: sociopathy, bipolar, and borderline. Often they have a very pathological attachment to men. Either they kill the children to get back at a love object, like, I'm going to kill our children because I'm mad at you. And it's hard to describe this without really sounding like it's trite, but these are the underpinnings of what these women do. So it's either I'm going to kill the children to get back at you, or I'm going to kill the children because I found a new guy and I don't want the children to be in the way.
Interesting that you said that. Interesting. But I also want you to hear the level of detail that she weaves into her big fat lie about her two murdered little boys. I can't even imagine a more excruciating death than being strapped in a car, can't get out. The car goes underwater in a muddy lake, and you're in the car screaming for mommy as that car fills up with water till you drown. Listen to our cut for Crime Online.
On the night of October 25th, Susan Smith knocks on the door of a house near John D. Long Lake. She's hysterical when the man answers the door and tells him to call the police. A black man just carjacked her at a red light. He had a gun, and she jumped out of the car. But her two boys, 3-year-old Michael and 14-month-old Alex, are still in the car. Police begin searching immediately, and the nation's media converges on Union, South Carolina. For 8 days, Susan Smith tells an ever-changing story of the carjacking, and friends get irritated when she keeps asking if Tom Findlay has reached out to see her. Friends wonder why she would care about Findlay when her two children are missing. On day 9 of intense media pressure, Susan Smith meets with Union County Sheriff Howard Wells. And Wells meets with the press.
Okay, note to self, who is Tom Findlay? But there's more. There's more. Listen.
Susan Smith has carried the lie as far as she can when she finally admits what she's done. There never was a black man with a gun that stole her car with her kids in the back. She now says she went out for a drive with her sons buckled into their car seats in the back. Feeling desperate, alone, and suicidal, she now says she drove to John D. Long Lake and planned to roll the car into the lake. Smith puts the car in neutral, but instead of going into the lake with the car and the boys, she jumps out and watches the car sink. Based on her directions for where the car should be, scuba divers locate the vehicle with the boys in the back, still buckled into their seats.
Just let that soak in for just one moment. Claiming, you know, why is it, Chris McDonough, that all these people that want to commit suicide end up killing their children or their family or somebody else, yet they miraculously live?
Yeah, I mean, just a horrific thought in of itself, right, Nancy? I mean, I actually drove the entire route that Susan Smith took that day. There were ample opportunities for her to change her mind and turn around. I mean, there were stop signs, there were, you know, through residential neighborhoods. And to think that she was saying to the public, you know, or to the police when she initially confessed, well, you know, I thought about committing suicide, but I couldn't do it, et cetera, so I jumped out. You know, when you go to that boat ramp where these poor little babies are strapped in those back seats, and as that car is going down that ramp, I would submit to you, she had gotten out of that car almost immediately and let that car go, to your point a couple of minutes ago. And as that water started to fill that vehicle, can you imagine the horror that these children were experiencing and the mother standing there as that vehicle started to sink? It took about between 6 to 15 seconds for that vehicle to hit the water, and within a minute, it was submerged.
Nancy, it just shows how cold-blooded she is. She could stand on the shore, look at the car submerged, and knowing that her babies were drowning, it really gives you insight into how detached and just cold-blooded she is.
Yeah, who is this woman? Take a listen to our cut 3 from crimeonline.com.
After high school, she began dating David Smith. Soon, there's a baby on the way, and the pair decide to get married. Ultimately, they have two boys, Michael Daniel and Alexander Tyler. But the children don't keep the marriage together. The Smiths separate several times. During one of these separations, Susan Smith begins dating Tom Findlay, the single son of a wealthy mill owner.
Aha! Uh-huh. So that is who Tom Findlay is. Okay, Tara Malik, high-profile lawyer, joining us from her own law firm, Smith and Malik. Would that be motive? She wants to be with this rich guy?
Yeah, I think, you know, she's painted in different ways during the trial itself. And there was some conflicting testimony. One of the theories of the case that was put on and suspected was that she wanted to be with Thomas Findlay. Findlay didn't like the fact that, you know, she had two kids, and in a way or in an attempt to get back together with Findlay, who she was having an affair with, you know, she drowned her two boys. The other testimony that was presented during the trial was that, you know, she was someone who was an abused child. She had had a secret affair with her stepfather. She was frightened of her husband, you know. And so I think those details this jury ended up grappling with, and it's a case that should have been a death penalty case, but unfortunately not here.
Killer mom Susan Smith denied parole after drowning her two little boys, her two tot sons, murdered, locked in to their car seat, strapped in, as she gets out and pushes the car into the water, then watches it submerge, murdering her two tot boys. She was put behind bars for drowning the boys, and in the last hours, a board unanimously votes to deny her parole after she appears in a jailhouse court feed. She was emotional and crying. She says, quote, "I know what I did was horrible. I'm sorry that I put them through that. I wish I could take that back. I really do. I was just scared." Scared of what? "I've been scared, but I didn't murder my children because I was afraid." Has she ever heard the word D-I-V-O-R-C-E? It's a country song. Listen to it, Susan Smith. That's all you had to do. You could have been free. You could have given your husband custody of the children. He would love to have had them, but no. You chose to murder them. Now, Susan Smith's lawyer, Tommy Thomas, told the parole board that Susan Smith had serious mental health issues and postpartum depression. And as an example, he said, "I could see the pain on her face. I think she's truly remorseful for what happened." Okay, good. She should be. But that doesn't mean she should walk free. I remember the case like it was yesterday. Isn't it true, Dave Mack joining us from crimeonline.com, that Finley broke it off with her, claiming he did not want an instant family?
He did. And Nancy, more to the point, or more than just saying, "I don't want kids," that there were other things he stated in there about her and their relationship. He also cited their different upbringings and that was a big stumbling block. Another one, the way Susan Smith acted and flirted with other men. He didn't like that. So he mentioned three basic things, that he really didn't want an instant family. But these other two things were mentioned as well. And one was her own behavior of hitting on other men. But she dismisses that in her thought process, blames it all on the kids, and thinks she can get him back if she just gets rid of that. She doesn't address the fact that she hits on men all the time.
So let me understand something. Dave Mack, she met Finley, the son of the rich guy, when she and her husband were what, divorced, separated, what?
Separated. They actually, when they were married, they had several full-on separations where they were not living together, were dating other people, and yet they would then get back together. And it was on and off for, after they had the last son, he was 14 months old when all this happened. So it was an ongoing process in their relationship, the breaking up, getting back together.
Let me go back to Dr. Bethany Marshall. What do you make of this? It was always presented that Finley broke up with her because he didn't want an instant family.
Mm-hmm.
But according to the letter he sent her before she murdered her two little boys, it was a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. He's probably minimizing it because now he has the scrutiny of the country and the court and saying, "Well, I didn't really want her anyway." But there's partially, I think, a half-truth in that. Maybe he wasn't ready for a family and children, and he was contemplating that. And I think Susan Smith was the kind of woman who would just ignore the fact that he didn't want to be with her. She would think, "Oh, you know, I'll buy a new dress. Oh, I'll go shopping. Oh, I'll buy some lipstick. I'll wear a low-cut dress. Oh, I'll just kill my children." I mean, just if she would just throw everything at it to get him back. So I think if he was ambivalent about her, that may have even incentivized her to kill her children.
Okay, I obviously need to reword my question. There were other behaviors he found disturbing,
mm-hmm.
which led to his decision to break it off with her. not only that he did not want an instant family, but he did not like the way she acted promiscuously with other guys. He didn't want that.
Yeah, I think some women relate primarily to men because they feel they can seduce them. And I think this was probably her MO, that the minute she met a man, she would be flirtatious, she would be overly sexualized, she would try to attract them. She probably did that all the time, because this is a way of feeling important, like she's a real person in the real world, and she doesn't really have to relate to the men. If it's sexual in an instant, then they never become real people to her. They're all just objects, love objects who flatter her.
Listen to our cut four.
Susan Smith is planning a future with the best catch in the county when she gets a Dear John letter from Dear Tom. He explains he doesn't think the relationship will work because of the difference in their upbringing, the way she acts towards other men, and he doesn't want an instant family. He doesn't want children right now. Susan dismisses her upbringing or her behavior towards other men as possible deal breakers in the relationship. And the only thing she sees is Tom Finley doesn't want children.
So she ignores everything except the children part of the complaint. And then suddenly, poof, they're gone. In the last days, Susan Smith back in the news, apparently having a romantic relationship with at least six men behind bars. Okay, what does that mean? Well, there are precursors to today's report of Susan Smith's relationships with six guys. What precursors? Well, listen to our cut 10.
A tabloid news report claiming Susan Smith had been beaten by guards at a prison in South Carolina gave birth to an investigation into the matter. While there was no proof she had been beaten, Smith told prison investigators that she had four sexual encounters with Lieutenant Houston Cagle, a supervisor at South Carolina's Women's Correctional Institution, WCI, where she's confined. Cagle admitted having sex with Smith and another prisoner and was charged with the offense in August of 2000. Smith was 28 at the time and was disciplined for having sex with the guard, while 50-year-old Cagle pleaded guilty and spent 3 months in jail. In 2001, a prison captain, Alfred Rowe, also pleaded guilty to having sex with Smith and was sentenced to 5 years probation. It was then discovered that Susan Smith engaged in sexual relations with Cagle after she tested positive for an STD.
Okay, so she claims I was beaten and that spawns an investigation, but it turns out she wasn't beaten. She was sleeping with various prison guards. Joe Scott Morgan, remind me, what is it like to drown? You're the death investigator.
One of the most horrible deaths that you can even begin to think about. And the fact is, the thing that's always bothered me about this case, Nancy, is that with Alex and Michael, and I think it's really important that I say their names at this moment in time because they are the victims. When they were strapped in those little seats in the back of that Mazda, in that tight little confined place where maybe their mother had taken them to McDonald's before, taken them all over town. And suddenly they're at the edge of a boat ramp and they're thinking, you know, what's mama doing now? You know, she gets out of the car. And as that car is left in neutral and goes down that boat ramp and begins to slowly sink beneath those dark waters out there, you know, they found that car at about 120 feet off of the shore. The dive team had looked for it for some period of time. Car was filled with water. Those kids were still strapped in that back seat. And our reaction as humans, if we're trying to catch our breath, is to fight. And just imagine this, Nancy, they're strapped. We've all got babies in our families that we've taken care of. We strapped them in car seats. And you ever seen a child struggle to get out of the car seat? They're tired of being in it. Well, imagine that, only water's creeping up on you. Water's getting into your nose, your little mouth, your eyes. You're running out of oxygen. Your brain is screaming. It's on fire because there's no oxygen. You can't catch your breath. And you have no idea. It's panic that's setting in. And it would not have been. I just want to dispel any kind a fantasy somebody might be having right now that this was a sudden and a quick death. It wasn't. It was torturous. It was absolutely horrific what these babies went through at that moment, Tom, Nancy. And I'm with you. I'm still to this day just befuddled why she's not sitting on death row forever and ever. She's getting going with her life now, isn't she? And those babies died at this monster's hands out there in that lake.
Knowing full well what she did, immediately running to a nearby home, claiming that an unknown male had jumped into her car at, I guess, the only red light in the county. And I feel okay saying that, because where I grew up, we didn't even have a red light. So out of the entire county, an unknown assailant jumps into her car at the one red light, takes her car, and murders her children. Okay, this is the woman these guys want to be with? Speaking of them, there is the matter of Captain Alfred Rowe. Now, we heard about Cagle, a supervisor at South Carolina Women's CI Correctional Institute, and what happened with him. We know that he was ultimately identified because Susan Smith turned up with an STD behind bars. But there's more. Take a listen to our Cut 11. Does she not realize there are consequences to actions?
Captain Alfred Smith was one of the guards who lost their careers after having sex with Susan Smith behind bars. Rose says Smith is a master manipulator, telling Inside Edition that Smith approached him at 3 a.m, telling him she thought he was the nicest officer at the prison and that she was lonely. The former guard says things just escalated from there. Rowe claims he only had sex with Smith one time, but it cost him everything. He was fired from the job, lost his pension, and after pleading guilty to having sex with Smith, he was sentenced to 5 years probation.
Take a listen to our Cut 12.
Sex isn't the only issue Susan Smith has faced in prison. Twice in 2010 and once in 2015, Susan Smith was disciplined on drug charges, losing privileges for more than a year. Susan Smith's drug use escalated when she switched prisons from Camille Graham Correctional Center in Columbia, South Carolina, to Leith Correctional Institution in Greenwood, South Carolina. Former prison guard Alfred Rowe, who pleaded guilty to having sex with Smith at the prison, told the TV show Cellmate Secrets when Smith was moved from one prison to another that it was at that point where, quote, she could no longer get the male attention that she used as a drug, unquote, and instead turned to pills.
Which led to a series of drug infractions.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
In the last hours, a parole board shuts down murder mom Susan Smith, there to defend his two sons, David Smith, Susan Smith's ex. He says, and I quote, "I'm here to advocate on Michael and Alex's behalf and as their father. God gives us free choice. She made free choice that night to end their life. This wasn't a tragic mistake. She purposely meant to end their lives. I'm asking that you please deny her parole today." He was emotional, holding back tears, his face contorted in pain. Susan Smith's ex-husband, the father of Michael and Alex, David Smith, attended the parole board along with his new wife and daughter and Tommy Pope, the prosecutor on the case. Pope, the former prosecutor, said, quote, "I believe the jury intended for her to serve a full life sentence. They wanted her to spend her life and remorse for Michael and Alex and what she had done. And she has spent time focusing on herself, having sex with prison guards, and more." So wait a minute. While she was improving herself and thinking about Michael Alex, instead, she was having sex affairs with prison guards and more. The narrative, her story that she projects is so different from reality. Life has not passed her by. She committed double murder. That's what happened. It's not anyone's fault but her own.
Absolutely. I mean, and if life passed her by, how does she characterize what she did to her son? She took their life away. They didn't even have the opportunity to live a life. I mean, these were really young kids here. And I think, you know, the pattern of behavior that she's exhibited, like the infractions that she's picked up while she's been in prison. I mean, all of this doesn't tend to show that this is someone who has been rehabilitated while in prison. I mean, she's still showing those signs of manipulation that, you know, she engaged in before she was convicted and sentenced. You know, leading on the nation for 9 days, telling lies about what actually happened, telling lies and pointing fingers at people that didn't exist. So this is a really deeply disturbed individual.
Chris McDonough with me, a former homicide detective and host of YouTube channel The Interview Room, who has investigated at least 300 homicides. You know, defendants can be very, very charming. Think about Scott Peterson or Dr. Martin McNeil, who killed his wife, a beauty queen. According to Susan Smith's family, they say, quote, she seems to be happy, and that she, quote, always had a messy love life. She's creating a fictional version of her life, and people are buying it. These guys, these lonely hearts, are buying it and attempting to have, let me just say, romantic interludes with her, Chris McDonough. Have you ever met a charming murder defendant? Because I have.
Yeah, absolutely, Nancy. And it, what's interesting about her is we have to always remember that all behavior has a purpose, and that past behavior is usually an indication of future behavior. So she has always, you know, throughout her entire case and through her life here while in prison and even before prison, she always sometimes projected the words of they into her vocabulary. And if we listen real carefully to the minutia of what she said in the very beginning, whoever they are, please bring them home. I.e., she's talking about two suspects, but she talks about one in terms of a description. And now if we fast forward that to today, we have six individuals, men, who quite frankly, I can't figure that piece of the puzzle out. You know, that's for the doctors to tell us what that's all about. But she is utilizing that behavior still to this day, by talking about money, by talking about sexual, you know, tiffs there between the two of them. And she hasn't lost a spot from this leopard.
You know, Joe Scott Morgan, maybe we just know too much when it comes to murder. Because when I think of Susan Smith, I immediately think of being trapped, strapped in to a car as it's going down a ramp and going underwater, and seeing the water coming up on either side and starting to pour in through the windshields as it comes up around you and you can't get out. I mean, the children in this case were 3 and 14 months.
They never have stood a chance within this environment. And here's another thing that people might not be aware of. After that car dipped beneath the surface of that water, one other element we have to consider, and again, I go back to the idea that we all have had babies, you know, parents, that sort of thing. I've got, you know, kids and grandkids whom I love dearly. And what is it the kids are afraid of late at night? It's darkness. And you would not have been able to have seen your hand in front of your face. So not only are they absent a loving mother who normally you would hope would take care of them, they're disoriented, they're running out of breath, and it's dark, Nancy. It's cold and it's dark down there. And that goes to the level of horror that they're, you know, experiencing.
Bottom line, Susan Smith, no parole. But here's the kicker. Even though she's just been denied parole, she's back up for parole in just 2 years. We wait as justice unfolds. And P.S., Susan Smith, I hope you're listening. Devil. Goodbye, friend. The end. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.